Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Oh, how are you doing?
man.
Hi.
Heck of a morning. I just was... So I had this idea, right?
Okay.
I thought
oh, boy.
To myself.
Here we
all
go.
All of my ideas end in disaster. I thought to myself, I'm headed on an international trip in a few weeks. I have an iPhone XS that has dual SIM capability. And
yeah.
I often use, when I travel abroad, I often buy SIMs from the country that I'm visiting because it's a lot more cost effective for me than using the international plans that AT&T offers. So I did a little research and found that like you can convert your physical SIM to an eSIM at an AT&T store. And I thought, okay, great, fine. That makes perfect sense. I'll convert my eSIM to, or my physical SIM to an eSIM, and then I can just use the SIM slot when I'm abroad. So I went into the store. And, you know, I had read a little bit, people suggesting like, you know, they tell you need to activate another line, but that's not actually the case. I was like, all right, I'm prepared. I know sort of the questions. And so the guy there, you know, he keeps disappearing in the back room to like consult his, you know, manager or colleague or whatever. And eventually, like, you know, is calling people on the phone too and checking. He's like, all right, yeah, I can do this. And so he goes through the whole thing. And of course, he goes to scan. There's a QR code that you scan to activate the eSIM. And he does that and it fails. And I don't know why. He doesn't know why. But because in order to do that, they had to basically like activate a new SIM, it apparently deactivated my original SIM.
Uh-huh.
So in order to then, you know, have a working phone, he had to put a new SIM card in. And they charged me for the new SIM card. I'm like, you're telling me I came in with a perfectly fine working phone and had to pay you $5 just so I could leave with a working phone that is not the thing that I wanted to do. And he's like, well, I was technically supposed to charge you for both of these things, but I'm only charging you for the SIM card. I'm like, great, thanks, man. Like, you saved me another $5 or whatever. But I don't know. It struck me as either this process is not very well documented and people don't know how to do it, or their system sucks, or some combination of those two things. But that, to me, was like literally the worst case scenario. I mean, I guess the worst case scenario is probably like my phone dies and is never workable again. But going in and out and having to pay to basically just keep my phone working is pretty high on the list of like, that's a terrible experience. I don't understand why I had to do that. So I complained on Twitter, as one does.
As one does. As is traditional.
As is traditional in this day and age. And the AT&T account did reach out, but I haven't heard anything back from my DMs to them yet. So, yeah. But that was great. That was a good start to the day.
Could you get an eSIM in other countries? Or is that...
So the problem is that a lot of carriers don't support it yet.
Right.
So, for example, the UK, which is one of the stops I made, first stop we're making, the EE is the only carrier there that supports... Right. A SIM, and that was not the vendor I was planning on using.
Hence your clever idea to get your AT&T phone moved to an eSIM so you have an open SIM slot so you can just stick any
card in
there
you want. Yeah,
and keep your phone,
I thought that would be perfect.
And keep your phone number on the other one,
exactly.
Which is nice. Turn off data on your American SIM, but leave the phone on, and then turn on the data on the foreign SIM.
Exactly. I thought this is ideal. This is the way it should work.
It's a great idea, Dan. How'd that work out for you? Oh, right.
Well, let me tell you a story, too.
It gets back to the beginning of the thing.
You know, it's funny too because I feel like in general, the more stuff has moved away from needing you to actually deal with the carriers, and that's a good thing because every time I deal with the carrier itself, I'm always like, why is this such a mess? Like, and then I think to myself about how, you know, currently there's the on pending T-Mobile Sprint merger, which may happen. And I think to myself, yeah, less competition. That's definitely what this marketplace needs, right? Like, that'll solve a lot of problems for us.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyways, the carriers are awful. It's like dealing with your cable company. Like, my goal has been to, like, minimize the surface area in which that comes up. Like, it's the reason I bought a modem instead of renting a modem, right? Like, I don't do any of their like bundles or deals because I essentially just want this like super simple exchange where it's, I give you this amount of money per month and you give me internet. And that is all we shall have to do with each other. So anyway, that's how my Friday's going.
Yeah. Oh boy.
I know.
So I have a little story that's a behind the scenes on a thing I wrote this week, which is I was listening to Connected, and I don't even know which episode, but Federico was talking about, I think it was the possibility of ARM Max, but he was talking about, or maybe he was just talking about the new MacBook Pros, but he was talking about, and Federico, it's funny because, you know, he's not much of a Mac user. He's really an iPad user. But he was talking about, like, the graphics power on, you know, like, Intel integrated graphics. And that maybe they were talking about the Mac Pro a little bit, too. It's like, you know, they were talking about specs of computers. Mm-hmm. And I had that moment where I thought to myself, oh, this is interesting. I'm having interesting feelings right now, which are, who cares what the specs are? And mm-hmm. and that led to the piece that I wrote on Macworld this week, which has the headline, "The Mac No Longer Needs Compatibility to Thrive," which I thought it was actually, you know, you try to come up with a headline.
Sure.
A lot of times I put the headlines in my Macworld stories and they're like, that's not really a headline.
Yeah, they just get changed. Yep, that happened to me this week.
And this one I was like, oh, I could write that. Well, also, you know, our editor was out for a week and I was feeling bad and I was trying to, he just got back, but I was trying to like be a good boy and write a headline and a deck that they might actually use. And you know, the thing is, and I did get some feedback from people that was like, things are more compatible than ever. But of course my point, and I got also from some people like, but I need to use a Windows app to do my job. Mm-hmm. which I said, well, read the article where I mentioned that. But my point is largely big picture. My concerns about Apple doing ARM Max that I had 3 years ago have basically evaporated. And I'm starting to think of it this way, which is era one of the Mac was when the Mac was, you know, first emerged and Apple sort of like came up with its own standards in the sort of Mac SE era, mostly for what ports were going to go on the back, you know. So it's running a Motorola processor, it's running its own bespoke operating system, it's got Mac Serial, Mac ADB, or Apple Desktop Bus, right? But it's ADB, Mac Serial ports for modem and printer, SCSI port. And and you were a kid then. In fact, true. I saw a picture of you.
Yes, that's right.
from
my Mac LC. 1993. Yeah.
Yeah. That era, the Mac was like in a parallel universe from Windows. Like,
right.
And PCs.
Yeah.
Like, the DOS and then Windows early era, they didn't talk. In fact, we were all Mac at my college newspaper, and people who had PCs, we told them to just print out their stories and give them to us, and we would retype them because
I remember
we
there being
had no
a,
idea.
There was a compatibility board that you could buy. It was like a, you know,
oh
like
yeah,
a
yeah,
Nubus card
it,
or
it,
something.
It was literally a
in.
PC on a card.
Right, and it would, you put it in, and you could run DOS, I think, not
you could
Windows.
Run, oh, yeah, I think you could maybe run Windows.
Maybe later you could run Windows, but
the
I think early
PC
on,
compatibility
like a,
card, right?
Yes,
right, that cost a fortune because it was a PC.
Oh yeah, I loved the idea because I wanted to like play all the games that you couldn't play on your Mac.
Yeah,
I have no idea if that worked well or not, but
and then,
I coveted
I think,
it.
I think at some point we got like a file translator app where if somebody brought in a 3.5-inch disk. We could translate their Word file, but then people would have like Word Perfect and we'd be like, I don't even know what to do with this. Anyway, the point was with its roots in the earliest days of personal computing, the Mac in that first era was basically not compatible. And what that meant to was it was actually really bad for the Mac because as Windows gained momentum in the 90s, the Mac became this thing that was like in its own little pocket universe where it couldn't use any of the hardware that was designed for PCs because the ports weren't the same unless they did like a converter or the vendor was like, oh, we'll also do a Mac version. But a lot of times they wouldn't bother because it was such a small and getting smaller market. So that was era one where compatibility really kind of broke the Mac in a lot of ways. And era two was, I would say, when Steve Jobs came back, because not only was that the OS X transition, but a transition that people don't talk about as much that I think was huge is the iMac, right? Where Steve Jobs was like, get it away. I don't want any of your weird old Mac stuff. We're going to do USB. And then they added FireWire, and then, you know, later FireWire kind of transmogrified into Lightning, which was an Intel spec. FireWire, I think, was a joint spec, including Sony. Like, they were all, like, standards, right?
Right. I remember that my Power Mac G3, it had an ADB port in addition to USB ports.
Yes,
they stuck
the
one
beige
ADB port in the back.
Yeah. Those early Power Macs.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like my iMac Pro has USB-A ports on the back and USB-C ports on the back. Like,
no,
yeah, we got you covered. But it's so that second era and OS X, like, it was all like, the Mac is a good citizen. Nobody even needs to know. We did articles in Macworld about this. Nobody needs to know you're running a Mac. That it was very much like, originally, it was very defensive. It was like, we're going to be as compatible as possible so that you don't have a reason to kick Macs out of the workplace. Because that was where we were, was basically like, our software doesn't work on your computers. Your networking isn't right. You can't connect to our file servers, all these things. And so in the OS X era, it was sort of like, oh, our ports are the same. We can use your printers. We can use your, you know, your drives, your CD drives.
Heck, we're based on BSD, you know, so yeah. There's a lot of intercompatibility.
We can connect to your file servers. It's like, it's all good. We're working it out. That really was a major part of why the Mac survived, honestly.
I would say the big chunk of that isn't mentioned there is also, that's also the rise of the
web.
Internet.
The web, yeah, right. So. And a web browser didn't care, except for all the ActiveX crap. That was the thing. That was Microsoft trying to make it that, oh, no,
yeah,
this is the web, except it only works on Windows.
Right. And the Internet Explorer 5.1 for the Mac, which was, you know, the best that was available for a while, but it still wasn't the same as what you could do on the PC side.
Yeah, and that was added compatibility, right? Because now it's like, oh, well, it's a web page, so you can, everyone can view a web page.
Right, or you can email a file to someone instead of having to worry about a file server.
Exactly. Yeah. So, served the Mac well, all that compatibility. But, you know, so now we're entering an era where Apple is sort of like, well, what if we just build our own processors, which they're already doing, right? But, like, for the Mac, and the Mac wasn't an Intel PC anymore. It was something completely different and non-standard and still had some standard stuff, but, like, what if it was not as compatible as it was in some ways? And what just struck me is it doesn't, the ways that it would not be compatible kind of don't matter unless you're really doing, like, Intel processor emulation and you have to run Windows software. And even then, I would argue a few things. I would argue that I don't think all Macs are going to become ARM overnight. You can always keep an Intel Mac around.
Well, I mean, and you're going to have to probably. The Mac Pro is probably not going ARM immediately.
Yeah, but if you're a lawyer, you need a laptop that runs some weird law software that's only available. But that's the second point. That's the second layer of this, which is there is very little in the realm of software that can survive the next decade. Can survive into the 2020s only working on PCs on Windows because of mobile, right? It's not because of the Mac. It's because of Android and iOS. It's like people want to look at their data on these other devices. And if the answer is sorry, that's only on a PC, I have a hard time believing, and I'm sure that there will be exceptions because there always are, any company that isn't doing a cloud version, you know, a web version or a mobile version, can survive. Can survive.
And there's always niches, right? Like you said, there's always, like, you know, I was reading that story that was floating around this week about how the New York subway is still running on OS 2 for stuff.
Oh my god, yeah.
Because it's these entrenched systems, right? Like, or you go into, you know, I talked about dealing with that my stereo, the changing that rear view camera thing. And it's like, well, that software is only available on Windows because it's super weirdly technical stuff. And there's never going to be a Mac version for that, probably. And you have those little pockets. But like most people, you're totally right. It's like it's not even 80-20. It's like a 90-10 thing, right? Where it's like 90% of the software that people use is going to work on cross-platform stuff because it's so prevalent that people need to use it. And then you've got like a 10% of things that are kind of specific to one certain field or task. And eventually they'll probably move on to something else, probably mobile,
right? Or they'll die. And my other little hedge here about this is, like somebody was pointing out that they have a piece of legal software that they still have to use, or their company still has to use. I think it was legal software, and it was like last updated in like 1999 or something, or 2001, and it doesn't. And I said, well, you know what? Apple's ARM processors will probably emulate Windows XP or Windows 95 or Windows ME or whatever. It's one of those. Windows XP, let's say. Fine, right? Like, if your software is that old and unmaintained, even if it's an ARM processor emulating an Intel processor, it doesn't have to do a very good job to emulate software that was written 15 years ago, because back then PCs were that much slower. So I feel like the more you think about it, the less of an outlier is left in the center. And I'm sure there will be, and there are people who love to be the one who says, well, actually there's this thing, and therefore your entire argument is wrong. And the answer is no.
That's
no,
not
because
how that works.
That's not how that works. And for that 1%, half of a percent that just can't use a computer that doesn't have an Intel processor in it, I have two options for you. One is buy the last Intel processor-based laptop and a Mac laptop and use it for a long time because it won't die. There's no kill switch. Or get a PC, I suppose. But I just don't think that there are many. What struck me about it is more like when Federico said, oh, well, you know, Intel graphics, or do you want a discrete graphics card or all that? And I just thought, wow, this is about to not matter. Like, that was my short version of it. And I wrote a column that was more about this from the processor perspective, where Apple was like, the iPad comes with the A12X processor, and that's it. And like, what is the speed?
How
what are the variations?
Is that?
What is that? It's
none
like,
of that
nope.
Matters. Yeah.
And
yeah.
And
it hasn't
like,
ever mattered, really.
And in that piece, I basically said, oh, this is the future, right? Is like, Apple will differentiate by model. Here's an iPad and an iPad Air and an iPad Pro. Here's an iPhone XR and XS. They'll say, here's a MacBook Air and here's a MacBook and here's a MacBook Pro. But I feel, and this is another like thing leading in this direction, like we're just headed for this period where Apple's going to be like, meh, none of that. Don't worry about it. We got you covered. I'm okay with that. I honestly, as somebody who's been buying computers for a long time now, this is the final ultimate point of my column, is like, it doesn't matter now. It's okay. If Apple does this, it will not be a cataclysm. In fact, for most people, it won't cause trouble.
It'll make, I would argue, it would make life easier too, from the spec, because like, how many times have you dealt with like someone who is less techie asking you for advice, being like, should I get the 2.6 or the 2.8 gigahertz processor? And you're sitting there going,
it doesn't matter.
You know, I think Apple's wanted to get away from this forever, right? Because that whole, when they were stuck in the PowerPC era, going up against Intel and having to explain how, even though our RISC chips are slower, they're actually better. Like, they hated that, right? That is a terrible narrative to have to put out there, because most people, A, don't care, and B, don't understand. So I think Apple's wanted to get away from that for a long time, and they can get away 100%. With differentiating based on storage, because it's easy to codify, this is how much room you have for your photos, your videos, etc. Right? Like, that is an easily grokkable point. And the people, that was the other thing, like people explaining to people RAM versus hard drive space, right? Like, a lot of people just didn't get the difference. And so I think Apple, you know, definitely realized when it came to the iPhone, they've never said how much RAM is in any of the iPhones. You can find out. It's out there. People know. But, like, they've never marketed that.
Well, that one,
and it's never been an issue.
What is the 1 terabyte iPad Pro has more RAM? And we know it, but they do not talk about it.
And it doesn't matter,
and
really,
it doesn't
right?
matter.
Like, it's.
I mean, there are probably scenarios where it does matter, but it's like,
for the vast majority of people,
officially, it doesn't matter, right?
Yeah.
So
I think you're totally right. I mean, I think this harkens back to, I think, a sort of a phenomenon that people really expected around the, you know, 2000 or so, which was this whole idea of like computers as an appliance.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think mobile devices have kind of gotten to that point, right? Like, you know, we used to talk about like, well, you just turn your TV on, you don't wait for it to boot up, right?
Right.
Now it's like,
My iPhone needs a slot.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I, you know, these days it takes longer for my TV to turn on and warm up than it does for me to unlock my iPhone or iPad.
It's true.
You know, and I think that's kind of the direction it's heading. And I think you know, from the Mac perspective, I totally think that makes sense. I've said this for a while, and I think you agree. Like, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. Like, this is, it is going to happen. And it's, like you said, it's not going to happen overnight, and not everything is going to make that jump, even in the near term. But if they're not working on that, I think that's, you know, I just don't think it's possible they're not. I personally, I'm trying to run my heir into the ground because I love the idea of an ARM MacBook that gets like 20 hours of battery life or whatever.
That's
like,
the thing, right?
That sounds amazing.
That they're going to rev the MacBook, that 12-inch MacBook, and it is going to be ARM, and it's going to have 20-hour battery life. And who knows what else they might do. Would they finally put cellular into it? I don't know. But like, yeah, like that's, imagine as a Mac user wanting to keep using the Mac, but getting all of those incredible benefits that Apple has seen on the iOS side. Like, that's pretty great.
Right. And if not having to design around architecture, but to integrate it.
Right.
Yeah,
and if all your software basically runs the same, right, or better, then great. Like, then you're there. And again, if you've got super high-end needs, then that's going to be the last thing to fall, I think. But for a lot of people, the truth is, for, I'm going to go back to your 80-20 rule, like 80% of people literally don't need the processing power in the device they use. Maybe 90%. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a small, these chips are so powerful. It's a small group of people.
Except for your web browser eating up all of your.
Well, I mean, there's bad software, Slack's filling your RAM. But I mean, realistically, almost nobody needs the amount of power that's in most of the devices that we have. So for, it's not for everybody, but like most people, the speed of an ARM MacBook is fine, and now the battery life is completely off the charts,
and that makes a much better, bigger difference for a lot of people, is how long they can use their devices. And I think, you know, people like us are going to keep our iMacs around because we are doing some stuff that requires heavy lifting,
but for sure,
a lot of people, I mean, we already know that laptops make up the bulk of Apple sales, right?
Yeah, it's more than two-thirds, I think, at this point.
I think, it's well over 60% and probably just
Actually, you know, I think it's more like three-quarters at this point, actually.
Is it that high? Yeah. Okay. And I mean, some of that was because Mini, and, well, also that, and they hadn't revved the Mac Mini, and they hadn't revved the Mac Pro, so, like, it was an iMac if you wanted a desktop map, and not Mac, and not everybody wanted that.
Right.
But even so, we know that those percentages are fairly small. So I think targeting especially the laptop line for ARM processors, starting sort of at the bottom with that MacBook, and maybe that's a reason that the MacBook Air exists, right? Like, maybe there is we've got the ARM MacBook, but we've also got the Intel MacBook Air. I don't know. I have no idea. But, like, I think that is, it seems like all the things have converged there. It's just a question of when that actually happens. And frankly, I want it to be soon, but I'm kind of feeling pessimistic about the rest of this year, thinking it might take until at least next year.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. With WWDC behind us, there is a question about, like, would Apple just release an ARM MacBook and say, oh, by the way, for developers, here's the new process to build for ARM and it's fine. And, like, would they need, I'm not sure, given that everybody's on Xcode basically at this point,
right.
I'm not sure whether they would actually feel the need to have a WWDC to roll out the idea of ARM Macs.
Possibly, or if
they
could.
They have rolled out new developer tech off season before in the last couple of years, where they just post some videos on their website and they update the software tools and they say, here it is, and that's it.
I wouldn't say that it's impossible that, say, you know, come October, there is, you know, if we have our traditional iPhone event in September and they roll out new iPhones and maybe some other bumps to stuff, like, that a month later they will do an event where they roll out a Mac, you know, a revamped 12-inch MacBook that runs on ARM. It's not impossible. I don't think that's out of the question. But, yeah, it's right now there's not, I haven't seen a lot of, usually you get, especially with hardware stuff, there's a lot of rumors that start floating around. And we have heard rumors about, like, that 16-inch MacBook, which is supposedly out there somewhere. But we haven't heard as much about the 12-inch. And it's interesting because the 12-inch is a couple years old. So
it's due. Peculiar. It is peculiar. I want to do a beta check-in. Are you running any betas
I'm not, for reasons that we discussed last week.
You're traveling internationally.
I'm
you're getting married.
Pretty yeah, all those things. I'm pretty confident that when the public beta rolls out, I will probably update my iPad because I'm not as concerned with the critical nature of that. But that will be the first thing to go, and then usually I will update my MacBook to the, you know, Mac OS beta at some point because, again, it's not entirely critical for my workflow.
Right.
The iMac and the phone. The phone I'm not going to update, I guess, until I'm back from my honeymoon because I just don't.
No, don't do that.
Can't even get an eSIM on it, Jason. Why would I put a beta on it?
Indeed. Unless the beta solved your, you know.
Ooh, well, yeah, that'll definitely. There's nothing, I have learned, there's nothing store employees like it better when you bring in a pre-release version of the operating system.
Do not travel with a beta on a phone, people. Don't do it. So, for me, I have an external SSD with Catalina on it that I've been
taped
booting.
Taped to your back of your MacBook.
For a while, it was taped to the back of Lauren's MacBook. So she was really happy about that.
That's definitely a lot better.
But it's, you know, and I can boot into it from there, or I can boot into it from my iMac, and it's fine. Actually, one of my little tricks for working on this and comparing the old to the new is my Mac Mini is running Mojave, and I open a screen sharing window in Catalina, and I can like A/B compare. Which is actually pretty great. That's my method of doing it. Because you got to be able to compare old to new. I don't just look at something and go, oh, this, let me see all the changes. I really need to kind of like put them both up there and sort of like go through and say what's changed.
Yep. I used to have, when I did the iOS stuff, I used to do like, I would have still two phones sometimes then. And I would be like side by side going through all the settings, windows,
exactly,
and everything.
Yeah. You want to dig through it. I did. So I was listening, once again, I'll say, to Connected, which is one of the podcasts that I try to listen to every week. And Federico was talking about installing the betas on all his devices. It's like, and he said, the iPhone is bad, don't do it. And he said, the iPad is pretty good, the second developer beta. He said, but... And he's talking about like, oh, it's pretty good. It does this and it's pretty stable. And I'm like, oh, maybe I should actually take the plunge on my actual iPad. Mm-hmm. And then he says, but you shouldn't do it because, you know, it's still weird and it's a beta and you should probably wait. And I'm like, OK, well, maybe I'll wait, Federico. Maybe I'll do that. And then he says, unless you're writing about it, in which case you should just do it because that's your job. And I was like, oh, you're right, Federico. You're right. I am going to do it. And I came home and I installed the beta on my iPad. So now my primary iPad is now running the iOS 13 beta, and it's fine. You know, I know what I'm getting myself into, which is weird quirks, but having seen it run on my little test ones, it seems okay. It seems usable, and it's going to get, I've already learned like 40 things that I just did not learn poking around an empty, you know, test iPad, because now it's my real iPad.
Right. Yeah. I was going to say we all have our... instigators, is that the right word? In the same way that you convinced me to buy a CarPlay unit for my car.
Yeah, Federico's fault. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's fine. Throw him right under
but
the
But he
iPad.
Gave me a column idea too, so he gives with one hand and takes away with the other.
I have to say, of the betas, I think the iPad one is the one I'm most interested in. It seems like it has the biggest potential to change stuff, but it's always a crapshoot with me because even though I feel like there's better, more interesting changes on the iPad side, I use my iPhone way more. And so the impact of stuff felt on the iPhone is always magnified because it's the device I use the most, probably.
Of course. But that also makes it the most delicate.
Indeed. Although, yeah, it's gotten more robust in that way, but it's still, yeah, betas always have to be a little catch. I mean, of course, what will happen is I'll install it on my iPad and then think to myself, well, this would be just so much better if I had it on both, because like then it will work in concert. And then I'll be like, no!
Well, I spent part of last night fixing all my shortcuts that stopped working right.
Nice.
And they all work right now, which is great. Including working around a bug that I found that is filed and that they know about, apparently. I was complaining about it to Matthew Casanelli on Twitter, and somebody apparently from the shortcuts team said, oh, you filed that as a bug? What's the number? And I sent him the number. So I was like, all right, they're on the case, I guess. But I worked around it. But it was one of those things where I was like, well, now that I'm here, I'm going to do this. I'm going to make this effort. And I learned a bunch of stuff about shortcuts as I was doing that, which was pretty cool. So... Yeah, before we go, we have a calendar question.
Calendar.
I know, we do. I'm on vacation next Friday. Are you around the following Friday, or are you doing things? That's a week before you're getting married.
Well, let me tell you, my fiance will be in France, so I will be around because I don't do anything.
Yeah, okay. Well, then maybe we're just going to skip a week. How about that?
Okay. We can do that.
You know,
we can sneak beneath Calendar's radar.
Oh, that's his yes. Dog. Calendar's his dog, little dog, Ray.
Yeah,
Radar.
It's Calendar and Ray Dar.
Okay. That's canon now that we've made that canon. But what I'm saying is, dear listeners, we will miss you next week, but I will miss you less than Dan because I will be in Hawaii. That's how that's going to work.
God, I'll miss. I have regrets.
You're going to fantastic international destinations for the honeymoon.
But not for like another month.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I got to get through this month first. Let me tell you.
I'm going to Hawaii. When I set up all those reservations, it was a long time coming. And now I'm like, it's next week. Let's make that happen.
That's how that goes. Yeah.
Oh, it's so good. So yes, we were going to skip next week. Dan, you can record a podcast by yourself if you want to. But
I can't. I just talk to people for 5 minutes. Tell them what has gone wrong in my technological life next week.
Yeah.
But there's always
I won't be here because I'll be on my first full day of relaxation in Hawaii. That's what. So, and if you're in Hawaii, don't look for me. You won't find me.
Hidden.
I'm going to remain hidden. But we'll be back in 2 weeks because Dan will be all alone. But until then, goodbye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.